You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
I am Janice Martin Johnson, otherwise known as Jan Johnson, and I married Edward A. Ted Johnson.
Jan Johnson is a kind, happy, and beautiful 84-year-old woman. She has filled her life with love, service, and laughter. She shared it with her beloved husband, Ted, their 11 children, 48 grandchildren, and many great-grandchildren. She's the kind of woman who can do it all and will do it with a smile. Jan was born to Helen Krumperman and Alfred James Martin and was raised mostly in California, both in the San Francisco area and in Glendale, just outside LA. And for a little while, they lived in Short Hills, New Jersey. As I sat with Jan, I couldn't help but smile as I watched her big, round, blue eyes sparkle when she talked about people she loves, and the many twists and turns her life has taken. Throughout her years, she's held a firm belief that everything works out as it should. "Don't sweat the small stuff," she says. She also emphasized the importance of making correct choices along the way and keeping a strong faith in God. She shared with me several experiences of looking back and seeing how one small decision changed the course of her life. That's where we're going to start her story. This is Jan telling us about one of those choices that turned out to be extremely important.
When we lived in Oakland and I was only 4 or 5, you could start school in January, the end of January, at the semester break if your birthday was after the first of the year. Well, mine was. It was in March. So I didn't start school until the end of January. And I went to kindergarten, and I hated it. I just felt like they just played all the time, and I wanted to learn. Well, then we moved to Southern Cal, and they had a different system down there. And so when we went to go to school in September, they wanted to put me in kindergarten. And Mother said, "No way." She hated it. And they kept saying, "No, she's too young. We're not putting her in first grade." Finally, Mother prevailed, got me into first grade. They said, "Okay, we'll go ahead, put her in and see how she does. If she does okay, we'll just leave her there." If they hadn't done that, I would not have been at BYU when Ted was there for his last year, because he was already a fifth-year senior.
As a fifth-year senior, Ted Johnson was attending a Brigham Young University basketball game. In the crowd, he saw a beautiful girl walking with a boy he knew named Sloan from Southern California.
We had come back from Christmas break to BYU, and I went to a ball game with a fellow that I had known from home, and Ted saw me there. And so he went home. He was living with 11 other guys. He was the cook for them so that he didn't have to pay any rent because he was pretty poor. And he told all the fellows, "I'll give you 2 bits for anybody who can find out who was with Sloan at the game the other night."
That was Friday night. Ted was determined to find his mystery girl and was widely advertising his 2-bit reward for anyone who could find her. Jan, meanwhile, was completely oblivious to all of this going on. The next night, Saturday, Jan was off on a blind date with one of her brother's friends.
This fellow said, "Let's go to some girls I know who live off campus, and they're having a little get-together there." So we went to these girls' home, and there was this girl sitting at the piano singing, and I thought, wow, wouldn't she be a fun sister-in-law? And I literally pinched my arm because I thought, why would I have a thought like that? For heaven's sakes, you're a freshman. So they started to laugh and joke about her brother who had seen a girl the night before and had a 2-bit reward out for anybody who could find out who she was. But they didn't say who the girl was with, or else I would have known it was me. But there I sat.
A few days later, on Tuesday evening, it was time for the weekly church activity. Sloan, Jan's friend from home, who was with her at the basketball game, was teaching the lesson, and all of Jan's roommates were going. They begged her to come along, but she just wasn't too sure about it. This is another one of those moments where her seemingly small decision made a huge impact on her life.
My roommate said, come on, you're going with this. So I said, okay. So I put my coat on. I took it off. No, I don't want to go. And it was snowing outside and it was really cold. And I don't know how many times I took my coat off and on. And finally they said, you're going to go with us. So I went with them. And as I walked into the building and looked down the hall, there was this guy in a long overcoat. And I thought, man, he looks like a happy young married in an overcoat that he's been around the world in. And he had been around the world in it, and he was happy, but he wasn't married. Anyway, we walked down the hall, and he came up to us and talked to us, and I could tell he was interested in me, but I kept trying to kind of pawn him off onto my roommates because one of the reasons I'd gone to Mutual was to hear Sloan give the lesson. Anyway, we get home, and he calls, and he says, how does a guy like me get to know a girl like you? And I thought, that's a dumb line. So anyway, we had a date the next night, went out and studied at the library, and I think we went and saw a movie a few nights later, and it just took off from there. And then we were driving down a street a couple of weeks later, and he said, this is the street where my sister lives. And there was this girl walking along the street, and he said, oh, there she is. And I looked at her and thought, oh, my stars, that's the girl that was sitting at the piano singing. And she's the girl who said her brother was looking for a girl. That's how I figured it out.
Ted and Jan were married on December 21st, 1957, in Los Angeles, after being engaged for what Jan said was too long. At the time of their wedding, Ted was 25 years old and Jan was only 18, which is something she's still teased about to this day. The two of them moved to Southern California, where Ted began law school. He worked and took classes at night, while Jan finished medical assistant school, worked for a pediatrician, and managed apartments. This is where her lifelong legacy of motherhood began. Ted and Jan welcomed their first two kids, Carrie and Paul, in Southern California. They then moved to Buell, Idaho, Ted's hometown, and lived just across the street from his parents. Soon after, they headed to Florida so Ted could work as an attorney for the Air Force. It was around this time they welcomed their third, Kristen. After a few years in Florida, they decided it was time to find a place to lay down roots.
Our friend was leaving the JAG office in Mountain Home, Idaho, and thought, oh, let's ask for that transfer and live in Boise and commute to Mountain Home to see if Boise is where we want to live and set up a law practice. Well, we got the transfer after my husband had gone to the Pentagon to talk to some of the people, and he overheard one general say, I had a guy request to go to Mountain Home. He's either crazy, a Mormon, or a fisherman. We figured he was all three. So anyway, we got the transfer. We came to Boise to live. He commuted. And I don't remember ever talking about whether we wanted to stay in Boise to live or not. We just stayed. We knew we wanted to live out on an acreage because we wanted to raise our kids in an environment where they'd have responsibility with animals and irrigating. And we just wanted the more country life. So many times on Sunday afternoons, we would take a little drive out and around. Well, this one Sunday afternoon, we took a drive and we looked over and saw a whole bunch of trees. Boy, look at that. Doesn't that look fun? And we went a little bit further and there we could see another bunch of trees down this gravel, just a little gravel road. So we thought, let's turn down there and go see that. And we went down and there were a bunch of trees and an old barn and a little old shack of a house. We thought, wow, doesn't that look interesting? So the next day, Grandpa went to the county recorders and looked up who owned it, contacted the man, Tom Percy, and he said, oh, I just took the for sale sign down because nobody had called. And so we bought 20 acres for $1,200 an acre, and we're just so excited. We'd come out here and roast wieners and then we drew up plans for the house. Grandpa was being way too opinionated about the house, I thought. And one night, we went to bed kind of cross with each other because he had, I thought, too many opinions about how this or that ought to be. And I was reading this book called Fascinating Womanhood at the same time. And I picked up that book to read in bed, and it said something to the effect that the man would get the final say. I threw the book down. No way is he getting the final say on this house that I'm spending all my life in. So we didn't talk about house, and it came for a while, maybe a month. And then it was Christmas holiday, and we went driving through the Highlands just to see all the pretty Christmas lights on the houses. And I'd say, oh, look, I love the style of that house. And Grandpa would say, yeah, I do too. And then he'd say, look at that house. And we found out that we did agree on style. And then we finally agreed that I could design the kitchen and he could design the master bathroom.
Perfect.
And after that, we got along fine.
So you started building the house.
Well, we lived in a trailer out here, while we were building the house. We built it with the master plan that we would add a formal entry and living room. And so about 4 years later, Grandpa decided he would build it. So he had the frame made and had just put the frame up, and a big wind came along and it blew it down. And that was heaven sent, because he said, I think we'll hire somebody to build this.
And it was in that house, on that farm, Jan and Ted raised their 11 children. While in Boise, they welcomed numbers 4 through 9, Becca, Tucker, Martha, Clark, David, and Sam.
So tell me, was 11 kids always the plan?
Well, we talked about having 8 children, but I'll have to tell you this kind of a funny story. When I was a teenager in New Jersey, probably only about 12 or 13, I went to this movie that was called Cheaper by the Dozen. So this is back in the 50s. It's the old version of that movie. And I can remember as I walked out of that theater, I thought, I can do that. And so anyway, when we got married, we talked about having 8. When we had our 8, we just thought, oh, no, that we still have a few more. After 11, we were very content. That was it.
And how quickly can you name all 11 kids in order?
Carrie, Paul, Kristen, Becca, Tucker, Martha, Clark, David, David, Sam, Jenny, Tyler. Somebody asked me once if I could say them backwards. No, I can't. I have to think about it. Oh, and here's an interesting little thing. I am about to turn 84, which means my oldest one turned 64 and my youngest one turned 44, 20 years and 2 days apart from the oldest to the youngest.
20 years. Wow. That sounds kind of exhausting. How did you keep up with all of that? How did you do it?
First of all, they weren't all the same age at the same time, so you didn't have 11 two-year-olds. And by the time you had younger children, older children could help out and take some responsibility that way. But I used to always have a favorite saying, you eat the elephant a bite at a time. Just take a little bite and just to get it done. I can remember, yes, you collapse into bed sometimes just so exhausted.
Yeah, I can only imagine how much work it must have taken to run a household like that. So what was your approach to it? Were you strict? What was your parenting style like?
I'm not sure I was strict. Sometimes I think I should have been more strict. To me, it was more important to have peace and love and helping each other than it was to be so rigid with a rule or a law. As far as parenting styles, yes, totally different. It's amazing what can happen in 20 years. By the time we got the last child, we were probably way too relaxed. But the younger kids feel like they had way too many parents because they had older siblings telling them what to do. The younger ones never knew what a babysitter was because they had old siblings taking care of them. We were much more lax with our younger children. I can remember one time Clark and David were having a tussle. They were probably 8 and 10. And they were arguing about something. And pretty soon, I said to them, you've got to stop this arguing. And pretty soon they put their arms around each other and walked away and said, Mom, we'll take care of it. I thought, well, great. Let them take care of it. And Grandpa was absolutely adamant about 6 o'clock dinner hour. We sat down to dinner every night at 6 o'clock. And sometimes if they were all talking at once and Grandpa would slam his fist down on the table and say, "We will have 5 minutes of silence." And it never lasted 5 minutes, but yeah, we'd have a few minutes of silence and the kids would know that they had been way too rambunctious and they better be quiet.
Yeah. The 11 kids were definitely not the only source of chaos at the Johnson farm. Ted, who was working as a county judge, kept the farm stocked with a wide variety of animals.
Goodness, Grandpa just was into anything that was unusual and different. And we had ostriches, and we had llamas, and we had, of course, horses and cows. One of the first times that I remember swearing, I was about 7 months pregnant, and it was a summer day, and the fields had just been irrigated, and we had a bunch of brick at the end of the field that we had bought to build the house with, and there were still some down there, and they were kind of mixed into the pasture and the goop. And the cows were down there, and some of them got out, and Ted wasn't home. And I went out to chase these cows back in, and I had a loafer on, a loafer shoe. And I stepped in the guck, and when I took my foot out, my foot came out, the shoe stayed in it. So then my bare foot went into the guck as I'm running, trying to pick up a brick to throw at the cows, and I swore. That was the first time in my life that I had sworn. And I was so mad at Ted. And then another time, the cows kept getting out. And one time I called and down to the court, because he was a judge, a municipal judge at the time. And I said, "The cows are out and I am not going to go chase them." I talked to his secretary or somebody down there. I said, "Tell him that," and hung up. And the next thing I knew, the deputy sheriff was at the front door. He was so busy in the courts that he sent him out. Meanwhile, Paul had gotten off the bus from school and had walked down the road and could see the cows were out, so he had gotten them back in. So when the deputy sheriff got here, the cows were home. And then he bought a couple of llamas, as I recall. And this guy said, "She's been bred, so she ought to have a baby." And so he did bought her. She did have a hair lip. She was a little bit crippled in one leg. And months later, he had several animals that needed attention, and he called the vet. And so the vet came and castrated a bull, and I think dehorned him, and went and checked out the llama to see why she wasn't pregnant, and found out that there was no way she could ever be pregnant. And he went over to check our horse to just floss the horse's teeth. And the horse, when he did that to the horse dropped over dead. And we had one of our nephew's kids with us for a few days. And he just looked at Ted. He said, "Uncle Ted, does this happen every day at this place?"
In the midst of raising ostriches, llamas, cows, and their then 9 kids, Ted and Jan were called to preside as mission president and wife for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For 3 years, they said goodbye to the farm and lived in Independence, Missouri.
You know, going on our mission was hard to take 9 children, pack them up, but I felt people would say they felt Satan at their heels when they were getting ready to go on a mission. Boy, I didn't. I felt absolutely sustained, like somebody was helping me get through getting ready to go. Because you're packing up a big house, you're taking 9 kids with you.
During those 3 years in Missouri, Jan helped supervise and care for hundreds of young adult missionaries, all while caring for her own household and kids. She made meals for the masses and welcomed all into their home with open arms, including their last 2 babies, Jenny and Tyler. For Jan, the joy of her life has been raising those 11 kids and being heavily involved in the lives of her 48 grandkids. But her expertise doesn't stop at keeping her iconic cookie jar full. She can often be found hemming someone's suit pants or altering a prom dress just hours before the dance. Beyond that, she's anyone's first call when they need a pianist or organist. She's a talented and accomplished player. Her love of music has been a theme throughout her life. From a young age, her mom put her in piano lessons, like her older brother, Keith.
Keith was almost 4 years older than me, and he was already taking lessons. He'd come home and with a new piece and be struggling to learn it, and I'd just sit down and play it. Of course, Mom had to say, you can't do that anymore, because it was too discouraging to him. But I was blessed with the gift of being able to sight read. And to this day, I have to chuckle because so many times when I sit down and sight read a piece, I play it better the first time I sight read it than when I try to fix it up later on. But anyway, we had a piano that some friends had left with Mom and Dad. They were leaving the country. So they came back and wanted their piano, and Mom was sick about it and told the piano teacher. The piano teacher said, you know, I have a neighbor, a widower, who has a piano. Maybe he'll sell it. So she went and asked him, and he said, no, he didn't want to. Well, pretty soon she approached him again, and he said he wanted to meet the family that was going to have it if he sold it. So Mom and Dad took me over, and I played for him, and Mom has always said that I charmed him, and he sold us the piano. It was a Chickering. It was a very good piano. So that's what I learned to play on, and Grandpa found a piano after we had built our house. He saw in the paper a piano that was for sale. So for $1,100, he got this wonderful Mason Hamlin grand piano, which I absolutely love. Just love. It has a wonderful sound. It's over 100 years old. Well, it's about 100 years old right now. I think it's a 1922 Mason Hamlin.
This is a recording of Jan playing on that very piano at 84 years old. Love and talent for the piano led her to play the organ as well. She picked up pointers here and there from people at church and did take lessons for a short while. But really, it came naturally to her from her piano playing and lots of practice. She plays both beautifully, but if she had to choose, she would tell you the piano has her heart.
The organ expression is mostly with what mechanical, what stops you put down. You do have an expression pedal for volume. Where the piano is touch, and I love the piano. I can't get enough of listening to piano music.
As much as she loves to listen, one of her greatest passions has been playing for others as they sing. This was especially true when she was able to accompany her sister-in-law, Louise. Louise was the girl sitting at the piano way back in college that Jan thought would make an excellent sister-in-law. The two of them were able to make music together for years and years.
I just felt like, oh my goodness, I think I met Louise in heaven because I played for her a lot when she sang. And she sang some difficult stuff. One time she was singing O Divine Redeemer, which starts with the word O. And I did the intro and she didn't come in and I did the intro. And she looked over at me. She, what's the first word? I said, oh. I just felt like that was, matter of fact, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Another day to be able to play for Louise.
Louise isn't the only person Jan is waiting to see in the next life. She's survived both her parents and brothers, and her husband Ted passed in August of 2019. And her sixth child, Martha, passed from cancer just last year. I asked Jan where she finds strength through all of this.
It's hard sometimes. You get on your knees a lot. You plead a lot with the Lord for help. But I think the eternal perspective gives you such a view of life that brings you comfort and peace. And particularly when it comes to Grandpa's death and Martha's death, you just realize that they're really just someplace else. And it's very comforting to know that we'll still be a family, that this is meant to be the way it is. It's meant to be a trial.
As you've heard throughout Jan's beautiful story, she has an amazing sense of humor. She's been able to laugh at herself and find peace and hope in really tough situations. Her philosophy for this: don't sweat the small stuff and keep an eternal perspective.
Well, yeah, you don't sweat. The small stuff isn't worth worrying about. It isn't worth the energy. You just kind of learn that life goes a lot better if you don't let little things bother you.
That perspective and her resolute faith have made Jan Johnson a real beacon of light in this world. Her funny and inspiring stories can bring a smile to anyone's face and remind us what's really important in life. She has created a beautiful legacy of love. A special thanks to Jan Johnson for being interviewed by Hearing Our Heritage. If there is someone you would like to have featured on a Hearing Our Heritage episode, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com.